This podcast may contain language that's not appropriate for all listeners. Listener discretion is advised. Today, we're doing Three Wise Men and a Baby. So if you haven't seen it and don't want us to ruin it for you, you might want to pass on this one. And we will see you next time.
Woo! Are you ready?
One dry kiss.
Ding 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 ding.
It's motherfucking Christmas time.
It's Christmas. Welcome to One Dry Kiss, our cussy irreverent love letter to rom-coms, where we recap one Christmas movie in the month of December. Don't need nothing catchy to say, cause it's Christmas time. Woohoo! And I am here with my lovely co-host, who we know we have the baby Jesus in the manger. And if we're going to get all religious, I would call her a saint, because we're recording this episode, again, because of me and technical difficulties, Miss Saint Tamara Cosio.
Yes. We are doing this for a second time because Corinne, it's all her fault. My other co-host, Corinne Edding.
Okay, so inquiring minds want to know, Miss Tamara, Miss Saint Tamara, what are you up to this Christmas?
Going to my sister's house in Central Cali to go spend it with my fam, who I haven't seen in quite some time. I did get an invitation extended by Corinne.
Yes.
My other half of this podcast, who said, come see me if you want. And I was like, you know, I have seen you probably two times since I've seen my sister, so I might want to go there. Just no offense. I love you. Would love spending the holidays with you, but
she hates me, gentle listener. She hates me, but it's fine. I'll get over it.
Yes, well, you're not my favorite person right now, but I'm just kidding. It's not a big deal.
No, I'm happy.
It's going to be better than ever. Better than ever.
I'm happy that you're spending time with your fam. I understand. It's fine.
What are you doing for Christmas besides missing me?
Missing you. So, after many convoluted evolutions of wobbity-wah and dobbity-da.
Wait, what?
Mm-hmm. Look, okay. I wanted to have Christmas at my house last year. I wasn't able to have Christmas at my house because 2 days before Christmas, my dad had double hip surgery. Mm-hmm. So,
yes,
I had Christmas at their place, which is lacking of any kind of festive vibe whatsoever, other than me in my Christmas gear. While I have a tree with Gonzo on top and a few little Christmas things here and there, there is nothing at their place. This year, they can come up. We do Christmas Eve dinner and blah, blah, blah. And then Christmas morning, we have like a breakfast and a blah, blah, blah. There's puzzles. We have a good time with each other. It's lovely. There's all the blah, blah, blah. Very articulate. And so my parents love camping. The last time my parents tried camping, my dad ended up passing out for the second time within a few days. And they had to go to the hospital. And then my mom was like, not feeling safe about camping. I said, you know, while they come up, they can go camping nearby me. They'll be close by. I can help if there's any need, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah.
But I did not know that there was an issue with the trailer. Trailer's not getting fixed in time. So my mom decided she would take it upon herself to change things up, which is totally fine. She canceled the camping reservation. She scheduled an Airbnb for the 22nd and the 23rd. Checking out the 23rd.
Well, that makes sense.
And she sent me the thing, but I didn't really look into it. And then later in the afternoon, she texts me again and says, I made another Airbnb reservation. I canceled the first one, doing a different one.
Me and your father are not sleeping together on Christmas.
Right.
We're getting separate houses.
Okay, now I'm just kind of curious, like, where they're staying, blah, blah, blah. This one, the reservation is for the 23rd. Checking out on the 24th.
But you guys are together the 24th and the 25th. So what are they going to be doing on Christmas Day if they're supposed to be going home on Christmas Eve, Corinne?
I was thinking that I might go down to Fresno and crash your sister's Christmas Because I'd be all by myself. I texted my mom. I was like, hey, you made the reservations for the wrong day. And she's like, no, I didn't. And I was like, if we need to do Christmas a day early, like Christmas Eve, Christmas a day early, that's fine. We'll just do it a day early. And then I was like, hey, look, you know, if you want to spend Christmas Eve at my place, you are welcome to spend it at my place. I'm cat sitting right now. I can go and sleep over at the house that I'm cat sitting at. So ultimately, they're staying at my place Christmas Eve and Christmas morning, all here. It's a thing. Now I just need one of those magical cleaning scenes where things just magically bloop, 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 into the right places.
I will summon the birds and the forest creatures to come right over.
I tried inviting you over to help me clean this weekend, and you refused. And I was like, I thought you knew how to have a good time, but apparently you said, I'll be there for you.
No, I didn't.
These three words, I swear to you.
No, I did not. I sure did not, because that is a 6-hour drive, and B, not the first thing I want to do when I come visit you. Not showing up at your house with a broom and a mop and a dustpan being like, ready to have a good time, Corinne?
I already have a broom and a mop and a dustpan, so you don't need to bring those things. Just bring Melody.
Oh, see, but mine are special. Mine are special. Oh, mine are better than yours.
Okay.
Anyways, so no, that's not happening, and I'm glad you worked it out.
Thank you.
And I hope we both have fabulous holidays, Christmas days, Christmas Eves with our respective families. But Corinne, more importantly,
yes.
Did you do the fucking synopsis already? Because I see it's all in caps and exclamations on the outline here.
I know, it's very useful.
Well, of course, if you didn't do it the first time during our first recording, that is never going to see the light of day. That'd be one thing. But if you didn't do it the second time after the first recording, we would have a little bit of an issue.
Yes. No. Then we'd have to go into couples counseling and it'd be a whole thing. But I did it both times.
Nice.
Are you ready?
Lay it down on me.
All right. Luke, played by Andrew Walker. Taylor, or as I call him, Tay-Tay, played by Ty-Ty Tyler Hines. And Stefan, played by Paul Campbell, Brennan, are grown-ass men who haven't gotten along since childhood. And this year, all their mom wants for Christmas is for them to bond with each other.
Not asking too much. Not at all.
Like, they're grown-ass men. Can't they get along? Please. The prospects for... exactly. But the prospects for that don't look good until the three brothers, who are currently all living at home with their mom, sexy, end up having a surprise mystery baby dropped into their care. And not only that, but mom, aka Barbara, can't be there to help them because she has to help out her sister who lives in a neighboring town and had a health emergency. Will the brothers self-destruct like a baby's poo-sploded diaper? Will they end up using Will they end up using the innocent baby to pick up chicks and turn their mom's house into a den of sexual iniquity while she's gone?
What? Okay, that took a turn.
Will these man babies grow up, or will the baby end up taking care of them? Huh? I think that's more the most likely of the scenarios so far.
But where to go, yeah.
The final penultimate or is, will these brothers become wiser with experience, transforming themselves into three wise men and a baby? That was for you.
Ooh.
That was for you.
Ooh, way to work in the title. I'm impressed.
You.
Merry Christmas to me.
Merry Christmas to you. Keep those listening ears listening to find out.
Bing, bing, ding, bing, bing, ding, bing, bing, ding, bing, bing, ding. I don't know why I'm singing that.
Ding, 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 ding. Hark, hear the bells, like frenetic style is our running theme through this year.
Yes, and every time we've had complications or a really bad piece of poo just fall on our head, like a poo explosion, we're just looking at each other during the holidays going, ready, Corinne? Ding, 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 ding. It's fine. It's fine. It's because there's music to go with it. To the shit show. There's music to accommodate the shit show.
We all need a little music to accommodate the shit show. Do you need me to sing you in, Saint Tamara, to the beginning of Three Wise Men and a Baby?
No, that's okay. No, I don't need it. I don't.
Okay. No. I was just trying to help.
this is not going to be another shit show, Corinne. Not like the last one. This one is actually going to get released. So let's not have any shit show singing music yet. This is going to be fine. It's going to be perfect. Here we go. A shirtless, ding, ding, ding. No wonder why this got such high reviews. A shirtless scene right out the gate. Luke Brenner, played by Andrew Walker, speaks words of affirmation to himself in the bathroom mirror. You're good enough. You're smart enough. And gosh darn it, people like you.
Yes.
He doesn't say that. He should have. Actually, he says, you're strong, capable. You're a warrior. Who is he talking to? His pecs? However, if I looked that good shirtless, I'd stare at myself too. But he's interrupted by his mama saying he's going to be late for work because he still lives at home. He goes down to the kitchen where she hands him green juice for breakfast and is looking nostalgically at a photograph of three boys and chuckles, asking him, remember how hard it was to get you all to sit still for this picture? He doesn't seem as fond of the memory as she does. And before he heads out, Mom informs him that his aunt's going to be visiting them for the holidays, and she wants him and his brothers to spruce up the place. Luke says he'll handle it and heads out for the day, not necessarily agreeing to do it with his brothers. Across town at Fun and Games, they are having their festive launch party for the new video game. Taylor Brenner, Tay-Tay Brenner, played by Tyler Hines, Ty-Ty Hines, makes an entrance in all black. His boss, who is donning his outfit straight out of Christmas Carol, tells him, I see you ignored the festive dress code for today. Taylor slides his lapel over to reveal a light-up Christmas brooch in the shape of a reindeer. His boss rolls his eyes and leaves to schmooze with people who he actually wants to speak to. So, Fiona and her bangs mosey over. Corinne, what was your opinion on Fiona's bangs? Because they were very bangy.
I had no problem with them. I felt like they were a little like rockabilly style, oh. You know.
There was a round brush and there was a blow dryer involved, definitely. She notices the pin on his shirt and asks if that's the one her mother got him for Christmas. He nods, seemingly bored, and corrects her. Actually, it was 2 years ago. She nods and adds, lasted longer than we did. Ha ha! By the way, there's some changes to the key art for the video game, but she doesn't get to finish because the boss man Scrooge is about to reveal their new game, Limitless Horizon. Everyone gathers around a large TV screen and a barren wasteland in a foreign universe flashes across the screen. It looks hostile, all except for a happy little snowman holding a sign that says, coming this Christmas. And Taylor is pissed. How in the world could they put that little thing in the game that he's been working on for months?
It's so cute. It's so cute. I love it. But
you can tell that this is like not up Taylor's alley. He does not seem to embrace the Christmas spirit as we do, Corinne. I don't know if you've gathered that from my outlining here.
It also looks like that poor little snowman is stuck in a barren wasteland. I felt a little bad for said snowman, honestly.
It looks like he should be melting, but he's not. He's miraculously intact. After Taylor sees this, he raises his hand, which Fiona promptly shoves back down, but he will not be deterred. Why is there a snowman that looks like a bunch of marshmallows somebody just pulled out of their pocket on an intergalactical thank you, terrain? There are several eye rolls and people exasperated at Taylor's response. It seems like this has happened before because we next see his boss in the office where he promptly fires him. At first, he doesn't believe it. Taylor Brenner is Fun and Games. But Bossman says, not anymore. You're not a good fit. Taylor promptly heads out. All the employees are still gathered and announces all Jerry Maguire style that he just quit. His boss behind him corrects, I just fired you. But he still asks, who's coming with me?
Yeah.
Who's coming with
me?
All Jerry Maguire like. A stout elf in the back yells, no one likes you.
Marvelous
and
Jim.
And so he leaves Marvelous Jim. The stout elf played by Marvelous Jim in A Christmas House. So Taylor Brenner leaves alone to forge his own intergalactical path.
Stefan gets a knock on the door. The third of the brothers opens it, and on the other end is a very enthusiastic woman with her Scotty dog tucked under one arm and a fruitcake in her other hand. Stephen, hi! She enters his place. Is this your home? Of course it's your home. Shoes off or on? Oh, here's a fruitcake. Ooh, is that from India? She walks further into the house, shoving a fruitcake into his hand. Next thing we know, she's sitting on the couch with Stefan sitting across from her. At first, it looks like Susie is there for therapy with her emotional support dog, Marcel. Stefan says, as we mature, it's not uncommon to begin losing interest in things that once brought us joy. But no, 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 no. It's the pupper that's there for therapy.
What?
And Susie, when asked for her motivations for being there, it's pretty obvious to the viewer that she's there because she thinks Stefan is a hottie.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, honestly, if I ran into Stefan at the dog park and I had my own little pupper, or I was taking care of somebody else's little pupper, I'd be like, totally needs therapy, totes. When are we getting together? Are you single?
Oh, my God. Bing, bing. Yeah. Samesies, but I'm like, Stefan, I have a list here. Melody poops and shifts, usually 2 hours apart, pees on things and then licks it up, etc., etc. Please help.
Susie says, well, I think Marcel is lonely. And when we met you at the dog park the other day, I thought you might be able to help me, us, her, Marcel. Yeah, that one.
She's Sabatole.
Yeah. She swiftly switches the topic, grabbing the one book on the coffee table. What's that? Oh, I did not know that you were also an author. Stefan is intensely uncomfortable with the exchange, and Susie forges on. Oh, and very photogenic. And we see his book cover, which is a gift to us all, and obviously an amazing literary triumph. Prime Mates for Life, with a red sweatered Stefan smiling with his hands thoughtfully on his chin and multiple birds flying around behind him while a passel of dogs and cats surround him like disciples to Jesus. Susie is inspired. Do you do house calls?
Winky, winky. Huh? Huh?
Oh, I want to thank whoever made that book cover because it was a glorious work of Photoshop.
It was pretty impressive, yeah.
Taylor walks home from being fired, and we discover that across the street from them, they legit have a grown-ass man neighborhood bully. And I accidentally wrote this, and I was like, I have to keep it in. Tammy can really pronounce it correctly. Bananasa. How do you?
Bananasa.
Bananasa.
This shit is bananasa. Bananasa.
Mark gives Taylor shit for walking home while he waxes his giant lifted truck.
No.
Okay.
Not unless he's a construction worker, painter, or has some necessity for that truck. Why the fuck does everybody need a big lifted truck in this day and age?
Well, nobody needs a truck that's lifted like that unless they're like going to a monster truck rally, basically.
Exactly. See, there's some instances, but yeah, no.
Taylor responds flatly, nice truck. It come with an unearned sense of confidence? Mark rebuts, no, a snowmobile. Luke, cool. You've got a bulb out. Mark glances around frantically at his Christmas lights while in the background an inflatable snowman humps an inflatable penguin in a luge.
Yes, what the fuck was that? It was the most sexy lawn ornament I've ever seen in my life.
I think it's the most action I've ever seen in a Hallmark movie, honestly.
Yes, I think you're right. Absolutely.
Tay-Tay says over his shoulder as he walks away, not talking about your lights. Later that day, Stefan is out at the park with his corgi Arnold. Arnold is going through his own journey as he lays out flat, refusing to chase a ball. Stefan empathizes. I get it, Arnold. Sometimes we all need some space to do our own thing. I feel very much like Arnold these days.
Yeah. No. Fair.
I'm just going to floomp here. Just. Ignore me. I'm just going to take up some space and just walk on by. It's fine.
Yeah. I've had some trials and tribulations this last couple of weeks, and I don't want to tell you this, Corinne, without you getting up. Well, you're going to get upset. I didn't even get a Christmas tree this year.
It's fine. I love you anyways. But I just am wondering, how do you have any kind of Christmas spirit if you don't have a Christmas tree?
Yeah, it's in my heart, apparently. It's just in my heart right now.
Yeah, you say it with such conviction. This Christmas spirit is in my heart.
Yes. Dear listeners, if you are also having some not festive feels, I'm with you. I feel you. I see you. And we'll get through this in solidarity. Ugh. Corinne will be the opposite on the sparkly spectrum.
I do love Christmas, and I have been watching exclusively Christmas movies right at this point in time. But I will also say that this fall / winter season has been really hard for me. It's the second Christmas since my sister has died who I totally did big Christmas celebration with. And last year, like, I was getting by, but I was just pretty numb. So things sucked, but I was just kind of, you know, like, nose to the ground, just keep going forward zone. And now I'm, like, looking around and I'm all, yeah.
You know what I have to say for that? Ding, 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 ding,
ding, ding, ding, ding, thank you. Oh, the sign of the shitty season, but still, we soldier on. Ding, 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 ding.
Yes, yes, yes.
So, Stefan looks up from his cute little corgi, Arnold, to see William, who works at the animal shelter, walking briskly towards him. Stefan gets a panicked look on his face, quickly clips Arnold's leash on and swoops him into his arms. William cheerily states, "Oh, hey, I thought I was the only one who knew about this path." Stefan, blanching white, says nervously, "Me too." And then William, oblivious to Stefan's inner terror, asks if he would give a talk about pet ownership / buying pets as gifts. Something Stefan should be chomping at the bit to do, but Stefan just wants to run away, responding, "I don't know, I'll check my calendar." He looks horrified and rushes off, ducking behind a bush to take some anti-anxiety meds. William yells into the bush, "See you after Christmas!" And Stefan whispers to Arnold, "Too many people, Arnold, too many people." I feel you very strongly on that, Stefan. Too many people. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I almost bought myself a coffee mug that said, "It's too people-y out there."
Oh my gosh. That would have been a perfect Christmas gift for yourself.
Yep. I didn't buy it because it wasn't big enough because I need my coffee in 32-ounce cups. And that one was only like 16 or so.
How dare that cup betray you?
Meanwhile, Taylor is in a gaming chair playing an MMO game, talking to a 12-year-old on some headphones and tells him, "If you like Stacy, you should just ask her out." And then is interrupted by a phone call from his mom. Taylor, not the 12-year-old. She does the total baby boomer thing of putting her ear to the phone for a video chat and yells into the phone while it freezes, and she simultaneously says she can't see / hear him. Finally, out of frustration, he stands up and yells at the ceiling, "Ma, be up in a few minutes!" That's right. He lives in his mother's basement.
Aww.
He goes upstairs momentarily and joins her for dinner, and she asks if she can help decorate the tree. He says he'll need to check his schedule. And we see that the house miraculously got dolled up. Was it Luke? Did he do it? Is he like Will Ferrell, an elf?
I'm guessing it's all Barbara. She does everything.
I know. Well, she asked if the boys could decorate the house, and we can tell that, or we know that they don't get along. So I suspect that Luke was like, "I'll just handle it," and just did it himself and be like, "Don't need no brothers. Nothing to see here." Mom nods knowingly. Everybody gets busy during the holidays and brings up Mark's house across the street, Lifted Truck Dude, which Taylor points out looks like a Vegas casino. "Yes," Mom says, "but a tasteful Vegas casino." AKA, she wants that. She wants the lights, the glitter, the glamour, everything. Just then, as they start to set the table, Stefan comes to the door yelling, "Hello!" Taylor sarcastically states, "Just in time for dinner. What are the chances?" And he comes bearing fruitcake, which looks surprisingly similar to the one the gal gave him at his last pet reading, which I would be giving that shit away too. If somebody brought me a fruitcake, I'd be like, who the hell don't I like enough to give this to?
Tam, if you ever gave me a fruitcake, you know what I would do?
What?
I would lift my fist up into the sky and shout, "Curse your sudden but inevitable betrayal."
If I gave you a fruitcake, you know I'm really mad at you.
Yeah. I'd also be like, "When's our therapy appointment?"
Yeah. The fuck did I do? Jesus.
Seriously. You know, we could just talk about it.
Here, I got you a fruitcake, Corinne. Enjoy.
Thanks.
And then don't answer the phone for the next 2.5 weeks.
Oh my God.
Ding, 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 ding. It's like a Christmas horror movie. That's like that scenario.
Revenge of the fruitcake.
Yeah. Taylor asks his brother why he insists on coming through the front door when he lives in the back, and Stefan argues that he has his own personal dwelling with an entrance that just happens to be at the back of his mother's property. And also, Tay-Tay, it's better than living in the motherfucking basement, so mind your manners.
Yes.
Besides, well, Taylor argues that it's temporary, and Stefan asks, because you were home today at 11, and it finally comes to light that he, quote-unquote, quit.
Ah.
Stefan doesn't believe he quit, and Mom is content to live in the fantasy land because that will free him up to decorate the tree for her. We all know that Taylor constantly gets fired because of his piss-poor attitude. Which is an interesting look on Tyler Hines. He plays Surly very well.
Yes, he does.
Mom looks down at the fruitcake and asks if Stefan's client is new. She is, and he proclaims how intense she is. Taylor, through slurps of food, mumbles, said the guy who color coordinates his socks. Stefan and Taylor continue to exchange barbs over dinner, and Stefan calling Taylor Dungeons and Dragons, Taylor calling Stefan pet detective, causing his brother to nearly shout, "I am a pet therapist," to which Taylor responds, "Well, all righty then."
Oh,
funny nod to Ace Ventura.
I did not even pick that up, but thank you. I really appreciate you bringing out the nuance of that line.
Yes. Yes. The writing in this is gold. For Hallmark movies, it's Hallmark movie gold.
Oh, the writing is very clever. Thank you, Paul Campbell and our friend Kimberly Stustad.
Kimberly Stustad and Paul Campbell.
Yes.
The writing duo. The writing dream duo.
Mm-hmm.
Mom is undeterred by the animosity being thrown across the table and asks if Stefan is free tomorrow to decorate the tree. She says, "I want all my boys together, like back in the day. The whole shebang, decorations, music, cookies. We're going to spend this Christmas together." Because it's not very often that we're under the same roof. Stefan corrects, "It's two roofs," to which Taylor throws one more jab, says technically one, and Stefan says he can do it as long as Taylor agrees, because he's the one that makes everything impossible. Taylor calls Stefan mission impossible, and Mom, finally flustered, says, "You're both impossible," and apologizes for even bringing it up. Jesus Christ.
At the firehouse gift exchange, Luke receives a doorbell for his house that looks like a "pull here in case of fire" fire alarm.
Which, is that a good idea? Because I don't think I'd ever want to press that doorbell, because it was surprisingly accurate. It looked like
it did
a fire alarm.
It very much looked like a fire alarm, except for the little push button in the middle. But even the push button in the middle was like the perfect like metallic color for that. Yeah.
I mean, maybe that's what you want to have on your door if it's too people-y for you in the world, because nobody would ring your doorbell.
Oh, I totally would, because if it's red and it's got a button, I want to push it. So.
Oh, yeah. That's true. I forgot who I was talking to. Sorry.
Push it. It's revealed that he's been building the house for the past 10 months. There's so many decisions. But one thing I know for sure, the gym is going right next to the pool table. The chief raises his eyebrows. Are you building a home or a frat house? He holds up a baby onesie with the fire department insignia on it and says, I'll take one of these, talking about a baby, not a baby onesie, over 1,000 pool tables. Being a grandpa is pure joy.
Don't yuck his yum. If he wants to wear an adult onesie, that's fine. There's nothing wrong with that.
Fire chief was a large man, a glorious, beautiful large man. He would not fit into the 1-month-old onesie. I'm just
saying, if they make it in his size.
Oh, sure. It's fine. Sure.
They make it in his size. And also, if it is accurate to a baby onesie, it has snaps in between the crotch, so easy access. Huh? Bonk, chick,
bang, now. Not with a baby, though. Not with a baby.
Yeah. No, not with a baby. I'm just saying. Like, okay. Jesus Christ, that took a dark
yes,
turn.
It
no,
did.
I'm saying, if he just wanted to wear the baby onesie, like you said, and that was things that, you know, I'll just get off the top. I'm sorry. I said anything.
You mean around his wife? Yes.
Yes.
Yes. When nobody else is around. Yes.
Exactly.
Yes.
Have you ever worn one of those, like, bodysuits were very popular in the 90s?
No. I have a long torso. I just knew it would be a bad idea. It would just get all up in my crack. Did you? Did you ever do the snacks?
Yes. And they were stupid. And I hated them. I only bought one. And then they brought it back, like, a few years back. And I was like, you guys are stupid. Because, A... so hard to go to the bathroom with them. Uh-huh. Like, there's an extra step involved. B, wedgies. Can you say it with me?
Yes,
wedgies.
Yes.
And C, if you get it even slightly on the small side, you sneeze and your snaps come up.
Oh, that's exciting.
Yep, sneeze your snaps off. Mm-hmm.
I was just full on into doing the baby tees and the long underwear shirts. But no, I skipped the whole, I was like, that those snaps are not going on my vajay. That's all I had to say about that.
PSA, people, if you haven't tried bodysuits, I would not recommend. But again, you do you.
Luke responds, I think I'll stick with the pool table. Later that evening, while Luke is doing gravity-defying yoga poses in the firehouse gym. Thank you.
Yes, thank you.
Thank you,
Andrew Walker.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you for that.
He's just bringing the Christmas gifts this year and the joy, and I'm here for it. The doorbell rings. He walks to answer it and finds a baby in a car seat dropped off in the firehouse with a note attached. Luke, you are my only hope. No, it says that. Luke, I have no one else to turn to. Please take care of Thomas for me. I'll be back by Christmas. So much for that pool table. And is there such a thing as tailored sweats? Because I'm pretty sure Luke is wearing them and they look darn good on him. Hello. Hi. Mm-hmm. And so, firefighters assemble. Luke is holding baby Thomas while chatting with his coworkers and says the most ignorant thing on the planet. Who leaves a baby at a fire hall?
Aren't those the places for baby drop-offs?
Yes.
Frequently?
Yes. Yeah. Yes. Yeah. Yes.
Why don't they just put it in the trash like a normal person?
I know. I'm like, to prevent children from being dropped in, babies from being dropped in strange places when you are perhaps a young or unprepared mom and just not like able to deal with the situation, they have safe baby drop-off areas. Like firehouses.
Yay.
Which hashtag we appreciate.
Support a woman's right to choose.
Yes.
Just so that doesn't happen.
Yes.
Just saying.
Oh.
I keep loving all the things when they reverse Roe versus Wade. And all the people were like, gosh, politicians sure do care about what happens to a baby up until the point when it's born.
Mm-hmm. Then all
up in the mix.
Off.
Yeah. And then they're like, yep, your problem now. Hey, we're just concerned when it's in your uterus. And then once it's out, yeah, just have at it. Good luck with that.
Fantastic. Yeah. No, I was just like, no. But back to the point, nobody knows who the mom is. And while they realize they should call social services, since Luke was specifically named and the mom says she's going to be back, they decide Luke should just look after the baby for a while and they can assess the situation later as more things pan out. Because once that baby gets into the social services system, it's all bets are off the out the window and, you know, mm-hmm. Yeah, things are complicated. So Luke insists the baby isn't his, but all leads in Hallmark movies are virgins unless they're widows. So the firehouse and later his family should know better. When Luke comes home with Thomas, he introduces the cutie to his mom, Barbara. I wrote Barbara.
And that's your mom's name.
Yes, I know.
You still don't know how to spell
it. Barbara.
That's banana saw. Yes.
Mom is excited and hoping that Luke had premarital sex, but much to her disappointment, he shows her his chastity ring and declares
Good
that
Lord.
The baby isn't his. Mom agrees to watch the baby for the night and is thrilled to have a cuddly little one around.
I was hoping like this was a missed opportunity that Luke was actually dating his firefighting coworker. A cute woman that was at the gift exchange with him, and that's why he was like, this can't be my baby because we've been doing the dirty and it looks nothing like her.
And she is,
and I probably would have noticed if she was pregnant, just saying.
Seriously. And she is super cute, and I was like, this was one of the missed opportunities in this movie. There's a couple of missed opportunities in this movie. I was just like, why did they not have the hottie black firefighter lady be his love interest? Because cute.
Yeah.
Super cute.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
No. Sadness abounds. They could have had so many lingering glances. They could have had like a cute moment with the baby. Like there could have whole been a thing, but no.
No.
There could have been a tearful conversation. Are you sure this is a baby? It looks kind of like you.
The next morning, the baby is revealed to the whole family. Taylor's downstairs and he hears a baby laughing from downstairs in the basement. It is clear as day as if the baby was laying right next to him, which I found a little unnerving, but nobody else mentioned it. He shuffles upstairs to find his mom and Luke playing with the baby. Bleary-eyed, he asks, "Am I an uncle? How long have I been asleep?" Luke gives him the down low on the previous evening's events while Stefan walks in, sees the baby, and is thrilled. "Am I an uncle? How did this happen?" Taylor, without missing a beat, says, "Well, when two people love each other very much." But Mom cuts him off and tells them both the baby's name is Thomas, and he's not Luke's baby, but somebody did leave him at the firehouse for him to watch over until Christmas Day. She's also pragmatic because she realizes the right thing to do would be to call Child Protective Services, but also knows it's very close to the holidays, which means the baby would be introduced into a very overworked system when they're probably stretched really thin. Touches my once in the system's heart so hard. Mm-hmm. Good job, Mama. Good job. Mom recognizes that the baby was bestowed. The baby was bestowed.
The baby was bestowed
upon Luke in an act of desperation, and this person trusted him. Mom is well-versed in how it feels to be an overworked single mother, but thankfully, when she had to go through it, she had family. And if it wasn't for those people stepping in and helping out, she doesn't know how she could have handled three very rambunctious and still rambunctious boys. And speculates that maybe this mother doesn't have the support system that she did, so they will watch the baby until the designated day, and if the mother doesn't show up then they will go through the proper channels.
Mm-hmm. Or I'm sure if the mother showed up being like a hot mess, they'd be like, back away, back away, back away.
Yeah. Meth is bad. Yeah. Meth is bad, lady.
Yeah.
And we will be letting you know where you can talk to the right
social
authorities to get your baby back.
Yeah.
Yeah. Just then, Mom's phone rings, and when she answers it, she's informed that Aunt Louise has had a fall, and she was supposed to be visiting them for Christmas. Her sons urge Mom to go be with her, and she reminds him, but there's this baby that we just decided to take care of. Taylor confidently says, "Lucas is trained to save lives, and he'll be fine watching the baby." Lucas gives an exasperated agreement, and the baby half-heartedly waves a rattle in the air as if to say, "Goodbye, go, have fun without us." She waits a few beats before sighing in agreement. As she leaves, she prattles off instructions and then says, "Between the three of you, you should have it covered." Taylor and Stefan balk, but Barbara insists, "You're family, and family helps each other out. And it's only for a day. Y'all can tag team it." But as soon as Mom is out of earshot, Taylor and Stefan say, "Well, good luck," and go to part ways until Luke tells them, "I can't watch this baby alone. I have an important meeting that I can't miss. And besides, Mom said." Stefan argues that he has a client and can't watch the baby, and they both look at Taylor. Stefan reminds them that Taylor has nothing going on that day, and Luke, exasperated, asks if he lost his job again. Taylor looks up at the sky as if trying to find the perfect lie up there in the clouds, while Luke slaps the baby monitor into Taylor's chest. He looks at it confused. "I don't even know what this is." But his brother says, "You're about to find out," and they leave. They leave surly, dark, brooding Taylor, who has probably never taken a care of a baby in his life, with the child alone. So what does one do in that situation? Well, Taylor takes the baby down to his man cave in an attempt to bond. He asks the 4-month-old what type of music he listens to, and the baby surprisingly doesn't answer.
What?
So he attempts to beat out a drum solo. The baby seems unimpressed. Taylor knows a magic trick. He grabs a handful of snacks, swings them up, and on the count of three tosses them over his shoulder in an attempt to be funny.
And I swear that baby was like, "I saw you throw those snacks. It's just right over there." Like, yeah. The baby is not looking at Taylor. It's looking at the snack that went boink that way over his shoulder.
Yeah. Unimpressed, but he does seem to take interest in the lights and flashing that's coming from Taylor's very intense gaming system sitting right behind him. Taylor smiles. "Now we're talking. Are you a gamer?" he asks excitedly. "Oh, then we're going to get along fine." He grabs some headphones and attempts to put them on the baby's head, which causes the child to cry.
Aww.
Oh, no. He stumbles around trying to find what will make the baby stop crying. He grabs some formula, tries to read the side of the package, and spills it all over the floor. Crap. Now they have to go to the store. And I myself probably would have scooped from the top of the pile, but that's just me and probably why I don't have kids. The 5-second rule. He gets the baby ready. They head outside. But since Taylor doesn't drive and the Uber's 20 minutes away, he is stuck. In a panic, he sees a 10-year-old boy with a wagon and asks, Hey, you kid, you want to be on Santa's nice list? I need that wagon. The boy nods and starts heading over before adding, sure, $50. Taylor balks at the audacity of youth these days, but hands over the money, gets the wagon, and heads to the store.
There's a short scene where a representative from the First Responders Children's Foundation is at the fire station, and Luke shares that the fire station is raising $25,000, a truckload of toys, as well as having an auction to win dinner with a firefighter, as well as private donations for said foundation. Back with baby Thomas, Taylor is at the grocery store and a woman is cooing at Thomas. Taylor asks her for formula help and she's of no help, giving way too many options. So Taylor obviously decides just to grab all the different formulas. And when he returns to the baby, clutching like 6 different formulas in his arms, the woman points out that Thomas may need a diaper change. Taylor gets a whiff and is appalled. There is something wrong with this baby. He steals a diaper, changes the baby, and has a pile of stuff to buy. But turns out he dropped his wallet, so he talks his way out of the grocery store by giving the cashier his watch and promising to return.
Happens all the time.
Yeah. Apple Pay, dude. Apple Pay. Anyways, back at Susie's festively appointed home, she's managed to lure Stephen there and shows him around, sharing that she's a seamstress. She takes him...
I just have to point out that her entryway was so glorious. It looked like she had a winter wooded wonderland in her home.
Yes.
I was so excited to see the inside, like, once they stepped in, and it was just meh. I thought they were going to walk into Narnia, and it was just like, it's festive, sure, but it was a bait and switch that I did not appreciate.
It's there for the carolers when they're like, la, 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 la. They can look through her door and just be like, wow, her house is a winter wonderland. Little do they know that it...
That was like the Christmas decoration equivalent to a dickie. I was so bummed.
To a dickie? Please explain.
You know those dickies that you wear like turtlenecks under shirts and they're supposed to look like you've got an actual whole shirt on?
Well, I thought you were talking about the brand of clothes, like the working wear.
No.
Oh, okay. Yeah. the fake... Those were really popular in the 90s as well. The fake...
Oh, God.
Yeah.
The things we did in the 90s. Jesus Christ.
Those were so bad. I never did those either because I was just like, I can't. I just can't with that.
Just buy the whole turtleneck, people.
Yeah.
Just buy the whole turtleneck.
Or buy the collared shirt and put the vest over it. It's fine.
Yeah. It's like, why are you going to go minimalist up top with the turtleneck, but then maximalist in the bodysuit and go completely around your hoo-ha? I don't get it.
Sometimes people need a little extra friction in their life. I'm just saying it's all.
Okay. Yeah, that's not the friction you want. Trust me.
Susie takes Stefan to her disappointingly not festively appointed living room and has him sit on the couch. Would you like a footstool? Beverage? Is there anything I can get you? Stefan says, an appropriately decorated house that matches your entryway because, frankly, I am just let down and appalled. No wonder Marcel is depressed.
I don't think I could work with you anymore, Susie.
Seriously.
I've seen the root of Marcel's depression, and it is his house.
You're just full of bait and switch, aren't you? What was in that fruitcake, or shall I call it a doorstopper? Is it really a brick? Just asking for a friend.
Oh, God. If I send you one of those, I'm really, really mad at you.
So she asks, is there anything I can get you? Stefan states, Marcel? Susie scrambles. Of course, Marcel. Yeah, come here, Marcel. And the depressed pupper perkily scampers into the room. Stefan happily greets Marcel, bringing him up onto the couch, and Susie oozes over the two of them. So where would you like me to sit? She plops onto the couch, scooching close to Stefan with little Marcel in between them. And Stefan stammers, well, yeah, you see, the clients tend to be more comfortable when they're not aware of their person's presence, so you should... Susie cuts him off. Oh, yeah, distance. I get it. She hustles into the next room, looking at Stefan, hopefully. He responds, further? She moves into the kitchen, and he says, like, next building further. Susie's on it. Got it, she says as she moves out of sight, startling Stefan by tapping on the window outside and waving wildly.
Boy, I would be a little discouraged if that happened to me. She's still like, you still like me? I'm still going to try. I'd be like, well, this guy's obviously not interested. He didn't even want me in the same house as the dog. Jeez. But after the session, Stefan goes to his mom's house to raid the refrigerator. He grabs the orange juice, and as he closes the refrigerator door, there is Taylor. He is slumped in a chair, covered in baby gear, looking half dead. Jeepers, Stefan says. You look possessed. His brother, with a touch of PTSD in his voice, says, I have been spit up on, sneezed on, cried on. I've been kicked out of two stores and exploited by a 10-year-old. You don't know the things I've seen today. Stefan scoffs. It's only been 2 hours. And Taylor leaves, explaining he has to go retrieve his watch that he left at the grocery store, and there's formula in the cupboard, and the baby eats like every 7 seconds. Stefan, now alone with the tot, goes to pick him up, calling his brother Mommy Dearest while cooing, Uncle Taylor's very dramatic, isn't he? He wonders aloud what they should do and decides on baking some cookies. Yes, the perfect activity to do with a wee one. What the fuck? Things that can spill, hot objects, and a baby. The perfect time to bake. A short while later, Taylor returns to find Stefan in the kitchen with a look of horror on his face. He has seen things. He's covered in flour, and there is an annoying electronic version of Deck the Halls playing on a loop in the background. Stefan explains, I was just trying to fix some cookies with the baby. And he just started crying, and he wouldn't stop, and the song is the only thing that would make him stop crying. Suddenly, the fire alarm goes off, and Taylor opens the oven door to find black circles that look nowhere near edible, and says, well, your cookies are done. And next, it's cleanup time. They both try to tag-team washing the baby, but it only results in them arguing and Taylor ultimately squirting his brother in the face with the kitchen faucet. Huh. Once they're done with the cleanup, they go to the living room, and Taylor wonders how anybody could abandon a baby near Christmas. Stefan responds, well, Dad would know, and then bitterly continues, oh, right. We don't talk about that in this house. We don't talk about anything. Can you imagine doing this day in and day out on your own? It's a repeating cycle that just never ends. Taylor sympathizes and repeats the plight of parents everywhere. I just need 1 minute of me time. Is that too much to ask? Then he sniffs the air cautiously as baby Thomas giggles. He's got a present, and you're not going to like it. It's in his diaper.
Yay!
Taylor tries to back away from the smell because, I can taste it. Stefan pulls out the diaper to helpfully change the baby and realizes that they're huge. He holds it up to his brother and asks sharply, did you buy adult diapers? Taylor shrugs and scoffs. Yeah, probably. Stefan rolls his eyes because it's back to the store with the stinky infant in tow. But this time they're doing it together.
Yay. Taylor needs help if he bought like adult diapers. I saw those adult diapers in the register line and I was like, oh my God, are you freaking serious?
Yeah.
Oh.
They do have the age suggestions on the packages of diapers.
Uh-huh.
I know Taylor's not a parent and doesn't have a lot of experience with the kid, but I don't think he's an idiot. But this movie begs to differ.
Yes. You know, this movie should be called like Three Helpless Men and a Baby. Like,
mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
What's wise about him? What are we wise about?
I don't know, but I will tell you that I could do better on my own and the two of us could do even better together.
Well, that's because I have like 9 years of baby gear experience and I had a hard time getting through this movie. And I believe it's because I have baby gear PTSD. So when I see like the car seats and the carriers and the formula and the diapers, and I'm just like twitch.
So Taylor and Stefan head to Target. Stefan, Taylor, and Thomas go to the store to pick up supplies. Now that Taylor has an adult with him, hopefully things should go better. They are seduced by a baby's first ornament stand and end up making a cute footprint ornament with Thomas. Fiona, Taylor's ex, runs into them as they're finishing up the ornament and is very curious about Thomas. Stefan and Taylor explain that the baby is maybe Luke. question mark, question mark.
Does Luke not show him their chastity ring? And doesn't he not remind him that he's a virgin?
Like, you know, it's so beautiful. It's got the year of devoted chastity. It's like a class ring.
No.
The red jewel for the blood of Jesus. You know.
No.
Little crucified. No. Crucified Jesus on there to remind you, Jesus died for you. Keep your legs shut. Keep it together.
Keep it together, people.
Keep it together. Oh, we all got to have our Jesus chastity class rings.
No, we don't.
No? No?
No.
All right, fine.
And I'm just saying, obviously, his brothers think that he's getting some action because they're like, it might be Luke's baby. We're not entirely sure. Instead of being like, no, none of us have been sullied by the woman's vile flesh.
Our loins have not been purloined by lady loins.
We are pure as the driven snow.
Bring by your ODK Jesus, crucified Jesus chastity ring.
The perfect gift for anybody, only for $19.95.
Wow, we're giving this away. It's amazing. Christmas gifts galore. Taylor stops Fiona as she starts to walk away. Yesterday was bananasa. I had no choice but to quit, right? Fiona is done with Taylor's shit. Is that how you're describing what happened? Quitting? Now that you've bailed on everyone, they're short a person and having to do a ton of overtime near the holidays to get things done. Choice move, dude. Anywho, enjoy your crafting. Fiona rolls her eyes and walks away. Stefan watches the whole thing, and when Fiona leaves, remarks to Taylor, she's so cool. Remind me why you dumped her again? Taylor responds, I didn't. Stefan responds, that makes sense. And I have to say, as somebody who has worked for a game company, there's several of these game programmers who are just horrible to interact with. And you're like, and how do you keep on making money? And it's because they're just really good at what they do. And so they're tolerated. But in regards to working with other people, they're just like kept in a separate like little area because they can't. They just can't. They can't.
That sucks. And probably a problem that happens in a lot of industries. Oof. This person is heinous, but they're really good at what they do. So we're just going to tolerate him. And you guys should just avoid him or put up with it.
Right.
Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas. La 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 la. Back home, they encounter the bully, Mark LeClark. Taylor has his arms full of packages and Stefan is gleefully carrying the baby on his front in a new carrier they bought. He's so happy about being hands-free carrying the baby. Mark LeClark drives up their driveway in his lifted red Gigantor truck. What's up, ding-dongs? Nice job with the lights. Finger guns.
Finger guns, yeah.
Stefan and Taylor don't really react, and Mark LeClark explains, there's no lights up. That's the joke. The brothers go, yeah, good one. Uh-huh. Mark continues, that's all I came to say, so I'm going to get going. As Mark LeClark smugly pulls out of their driveway, their mom calls. The news? She's not coming home. Yay! And this just in, I believe that Tamara has the 411 on that. She's live and on the scene. What's happening over in Louise Land, Tamara?
Well, we're in the Baby Watch chapter. And apparently, Louise has a concussion. So mom wants to stick around and make sure that she doesn't slip into a coma when she goes to sleep.
Good sister.
Louise insists that her sister can go home, but Barbara will have none of it. First of all, the coma thing. And second of all, this is the first time she's seen all the boys together in years. Louise remembers when the boys were younger, they were always hanging out together, but then when their dad left, it's like they all shut off from each other. And maybe this baby will help them fix things and reconnect. Louise says, imagine being so alone that the only place you can turn to for help is a fire station. Even though Luke was solidly against it. Barbara agrees. That's why I'm going to be here for the baby. We all deserve a and for the mom. That's why we all deserve a second chance, especially at Christmas. And I would like to think that I would be as benevolent as Barbara, but there's just something that sticks in my craw about leaving a baby with a stranger that you don't really know. Mm-hmm. Maybe she thinks it's Luke's baby. Hmm. Oh. That'd be an interesting twist. And Luke, you are not the father. Later that evening, Taylor and Stefan are attempting to put together a baby swing, and all they've accomplished in is creating a tangled mess of metal legs. Stefan's trying to direct Taylor on what goes where, but it's all gibberish. Taylor snatches the directions from his brother, reminding him that you have a degree, don't you? But once he sees what Stefan was trying to decipher, he shakes his head and says, I don't like this. His brother nods. It's like they want you to throw things. But they realize that it's silent. The baby's finally fallen asleep in the car seat. What do we do? What do we do? Freeze. Don't do anything. Don't move. Don't breathe. Just enjoy the silence. But they only do that for a few seconds before Luke bursts through the door announcing, Honeys, I'm home! Which immediately causes the baby to cry again. He comes into the living room and announces to everyone, The baby's crying. Why is the baby's crying? And they shoot daggers at him with their eyes. They know the baby's crying. They accuse him of being out until all hours of the night, to which Luke glances at his watch and informs him that it's 7:30 in the evening. And where's Mom? His brothers inform him that Mom had to stay with Louise overnight, which he would know if he answered any of his texts they sent. Luke shrugs. Sorry, not sorry, because normally those texts are just annoying cat gifts. They stare at him horrified. How dare you? That stung more than him barging in and waking up the baby. Taylor defends, those are adorable gifts. The two child-caring veterans hold hands in solidarity, and Taylor adds, don't let him get to you, as he cradles the baby and squats up and down in an attempt to calm him. Luke tells them to take a break. It's just a baby, and goes to grab Thomas from his brothers. They look at him with disdain. He thinks it's going to be so easy. Just wait. They both know the full horror, the horror of parenthood. And there were two of them. Just wait until Luke attempts to do it solo. They practically rub their hands together maniacally. And what happens to Luke once him and the baby are alone? Does he master the squat cradle as Taylor did? Does he put the baby in the car seat in an effort to stop him from crying and accidentally drive to Manitoba? Ooh. Does he put the baby in the fire department's toy donation bin in an attempt to pass him off on another essential worker? Find out with us after this break.
And we're back. When we left off, Luke was left alone to take care of baby Thomas, and we will find out about his harrowing journey forthwith. Mm-hmm. It's the next morning. Luke has had the baby all night by himself, and during that time, he's assembled the baby swing, is packing up all hand-decorated cookies he's baked with the baby in a Tupperware, and singing. Not the baby's not in a Tupperware, the cookies are. And he's singing Jingle Bells. The kitchen is immaculate, and I can't even have an immaculate kitchen with just me. Tay-Tay mm-hmm. and Stefan are all full of, what the fuck? And Luke takes the cookies and the baby, who has been bathed, burped, and bottled, in his words, by him to the station, saying over his shoulder to his brothers, Uncle Luke's got this. Finger guns, finger guns, finger guns.
God, I'd be pissed. I can't stand when I'm like struggling and really having a hard time with something and somebody comes over and says, you just got to boop, boop, boop. There you go. I'm like, get the fuck out of here.
Yeah, whenever anybody says, you just got to, that's when you know to knee them, because that mm-hmm. phrase is, it should be forbidden.
Right. Yes, hackles up, just like relax.
Yes, exactly.
What's the other one? You just gotta.
All relax, you gotta do.
Calm down.
Calm yeah. down.
Calm down is also another one. Yeah.
Take a breath.
Oh, God. Don't. I'm gonna take the breath right out your mouth. I'm gonna snatch the breath right out your mouth if you tell me that.
Tamara really appreciated the tone that I put into it. You know, it was good. No, I got to see her eyes no. light up with fury. Just rage.
Fury, yes. Merry Christmas, y'all.
Gonna burn this place down. So. Much like me, Susie recognizes a neurotic hunk of a man ripe for the picking, so she is continuing with her Marcel psychoanalysis by going to the park with Marcel and Stefan. Stefan gets a text, looks at it, and apologizes, remarking that he thought it might be about the baby. Clarifying, not my baby. My brothers and I are temporarily taking care of... He suddenly stops short, gasping in horror. And turning to the side, holding up his jacket to obscure his face, he sees the guy from the animal shelter and he's doing a bang-up job of hiding behind his jacket. Susie is on board. Is this one of your methods? Should I hide too? And she ducks behind his extended coat as well, snugging up into him. She looks around cutely, and he clarifies that he's hiding from that guy. And Susie understands. Trouble with the IRS? I get it. Stefan clarifies further.
What a thing to say.
Getting vulnerable. He works at the local animal shelter, and he wants me to do a talk on responsible pet adoption. The horror.
The horror. The horror.
Susie thinks he'd be great at it, but Stefan begs to differ. He's not good with people. Or individuals, for that matter. They're unpredictable, and he's not good with surprises. Susie laughs and explains, it's so nice to know I'm not alone. I know I can be a lot. I talk a lot of the time. She prattles on, and Stefan says uncomfortably, yeah, we're not alike at all. And I was like, ouch. I think she poorly explained that they're both anxious fuckers, just in different ways.
Again, if I was Susie, in my lack of confidence, I'd be like, this guy is totally not interested. He's trying to get me out of the house and I'm trying to bond and relate. And he's like, yeah, we're not alike.
Yeah.
Back away, back away, back away, back away, back away, back away, back away.
She seems to be singularly focused, though. And, you know, when she has a mission, I just think that ain't no mountain high enough to keep me from you.
And that often works with guys. Yeah, they love somebody that's honed in and unrelenting. Yeah.
Although I have to say, if you want Stefan, I think you kind of need to be.
I'm surprised he doesn't like hide under the covers every time she shows up at his house.
Marcel is very cute, though.
Yes, yes, he is.
Animal shelter guy approaches and asks Stefan if he's thought any more about his offer. But before Stefan can deflect, Susie jumps in, whisking him away with a question about flea control, using her nonstop talkativeness powers for good. Stefan suddenly has a newfound appreciation for Susie. And he gets little hearts in his eyes as she sees them walk off. I was like, okay.
She saved me.
I know.
She saved me.
Back with Luke, he goes to see the house that is being worked on and brings baby Thomas with him. Once inside, the contractor says, imagine the tree over there, stockings, fire, your family, in a fire in a fireplace, not a house on fire. That's, no.
Makes a babies in Tupperware, houses on fire.
No good, no good. Makes a big house not feel so small. Luke holds the baby and ponders his life priorities.
I have to say that Luke is the one person that has a good reason to be at mom's house. He's getting a house built. Yeah. He's getting shit done. Stefan, questionable because he's got an interesting career path and he says he has a degree, so he's probably got a mountain of debt that he's paying off trying to be a pet therapist.
But he lives in an independent, like, dwelling. He does not live in the house. He lives behind the house in a small house. So he has...
He does, but I'm sure mom is charging him top dollar for that independent house behind her house. Yes. She saw what the market rate was and then, you know, let him stay there for the amount that she would charge a stranger. Right.
Yeah. The one thing, though, that I do have to say is that in these trying times, there are more people living with their parents because things are so expensive. Sure. And
oh, yeah.
And also, I could totally see some kind of semi-communal, like, living situation with my parents. Mm-hmm. Preferably not under the same roof, more of like a Stefan type of situation. But
yes,
so that I could help my parents out as they got older, that kind of a thing.
Yeah.
But yes, yes.
And Taylor's just an asshole and he keeps getting fired. But anyways,
yeah, Tay-Tay just
it's true.
Just needs to slow his roll.
I've talked to so many 20-something-year-olds, and I'm just like shaking my head and be like, you're so lucky. If you're still living at home, enjoy this time. Embrace it. I know it seems bad, but it could be much, much worse.
Mm-hmm.
Speaking of worse, Tay-Tay Taylor goes out to drinks with the guy who runs a competing game company. The guy gushes over the Limitless Horizon game, saying that he wishes he could clone Taylor, the genius behind the game. But when Taylor offers to come on board, the guy backs away, saying, you're a coding genius, but Corinne's told me how difficult it's going to be to work with you.
Mm-hmm. Amen.
And adding you to my team would be like putting a brick in a washing machine. It would throw everything off. And Corinne wrote this little note, and I must include it. Cue the song, I came in like a wrecking ball. That was such a good song association. Anywho. And this next section I like to call, now Luke finally shows some weakness.
Ooh.
He goes to a big box store to pick up some toy donations. In the parking lot, he thanks the woman who helped him with the toys and notices two kids beating up an inflatable snowman with giant candy canes. He shakes his head and comments, some people should really keep a better eye on their kids, just as he sets down the baby carrier behind his loaded truck. Not noticing that he put his carrier down next to another baby carrier with a very similar blanket on top of it, covering the children. Placed there by another woman opposite of him, also loading her truck. PSA, people, do not put baby carriers on the floor behind your trucks for various reasons. One of which is this, because he definitely picks up the wrong baby seat and heads home. When he arrives there, he sets the carrier down on the coffee table and unpacks groceries. Stefan and Taylor rush into the room and bitch him out because he was gone so long that they were worried. Luke tells them they sound like a couple of old ladies, to which Taylor puts his hand on his hips and says, well, we were worried and had no idea what happened to you. Putting on very much an old lady vibe, but a hot old lady vibe. Taylor really gives off good surly lady vibes.
And I want to point out, like, this is the second time that Luke has totally failed on the communication front. He leaves the baby with them all day long. And does he respond to their texts? No. Like, there might have been some kind of emergency. The baby is being left in his care, technically. And what's he doing? Just, you know, fun things, I guess. Hanging out with the hot lady firefighter who I would also love to hang out with as well. And then this time, you know, he's not like, hey, BT Dubs, I'm going to be home around this time or anything like that. Nope. He's just offering to make them Greek food. He's got it covered. Yeah. He's got it down.
I mean, to be fair, they didn't have a really strong relationship beforehand. They don't know how to take care of a baby, and they probably don't know how to communicate around said baby.
Yeah.
So hopefully this situation will make them wiser. Wiser in their communication skills, perhaps.
Let's hope.
Anywho, Stefan goes over to Thomas's carrier and picks up the blanket, missing the little guy. But once he does, he realizes there is a very different baby underneath. And the smashed together word of that would be baby, apparently. A baby. Different babies are babies. Underneath the blanket, not Thomas. Whose baby is this? He calls over his shoulder, to which Luke responds, isn't that joke a little old? No, Stefan emphasizes. Whose baby is this really? They all huddle around the carrier and realize what the fuck has just transpired. Luke accidentally took home the wrong baby. Taylor says, well, it's not ours, as Luke looks on as if he's about to hyperventilate.
And I love it because this baby Thomas is like this cute little bald headed little baby. Mm-hmm. And then this baby is about, I don't know, a month or two older, giant. Right.
Yeah.
And
lots of hair.
Lots.
Big blue eyes.
Lots of hair. Baby chick hair all over the place. Little wonky eyes. Like super cute. Definitely not the same baby. It's a baby.
Exactly.
It's a baby.
I think the writers had to do that because in some instances, I'm sure that a guy would look at a kind of sort of similar baby and be like, oh, okay, sure. I forgot what he looked like. This kid looks different. Maybe he's just grown in the last 2.5 hours. Okay, it's fine.
They do grow awfully quick, those babies.
They do. Babies and babies both grow awfully quick. Thanks to the po-po, they're able to do a baby swap-a-rooney. We see the police at their Brenner's door. The female Offer. Fucking asshole, Tamara. The female offer is, you want to get rid of that chastity ring? The female officer is not thrilled about the mistake Luke made.
You know, Tam, I'm sure it's 5 o'clock somewhere.
What? We're just,
I'm implying that you've hidden the sauce. I'm sure it's 5 o'clock somewhere.
Sorry. It is. You've been on this video call with me for the last 2.5 hours. Have you seen me drink once?
I don't know. Have I?
Oh, yes, it is. I do have an opaque coffee cup.
I'm experienced in secret drinkers from my dating life.
Yes. Yes. So you should know that I am stone cold sober. Thank you very much. Luke sheepishly asks, this must happen all the time, right? He deadpans. No, this is a first. He goes back inside and Taylor mocks him. Huh? So Uncle Luke has it, huh? I make one mistake, he defends. And Taylor admits, you did, but it was losing a whole baby. Kind of like you with jobs. Oh, burn. Stefan implores them to stop. It could be traumatizing the babies. The babies. There's only one now. The other one left to its other parents. Damn it. Kids shouldn't see their moms and dads. Or their dads and dads. Or their dads and dads and dads fight. Luke passes behind Taylor and flicks him on the ear, which results in them fighting and Luke putting him in a half Nelson, which also results in them knocking over mom's favorite snowman decoration. Both Lucas and Taylor throw up their hands and hope that this will somehow absolve them from the accident. But before things can get any worse, mom calls on video chat. Luke answers it and she immediately notices that the baby's crying and asks, why is the baby crying? Did you guys get into a fight? How did she know? They try to assure her that everything is fine and wonder why she's not in the car on the way back, because she's very clearly still at Luis's house. She informs them that the pass is closed and she can't come back, and she doesn't even know if she's going to make it in time to celebrate Christmas with them at all. And they're alone with the baby! She starts getting emotional, and Luke assures her that they got this! Everything's going to be fine. As soon as she gets off the phone, Taylor and Luke start bickering again, and Stefan has had enough. The mild-mannered brother puts his foot down and says, gesturing towards Thomas, look at this baby. He's all alone, and we're all he has. And up until now, none of us has done a good job of taking care of him. So starting tomorrow, it's all hands on deck. We do it together. The two other brothers, properly chastised, agree. Way to put on your big boy pants, Stefan, and take control.
Yay! The next day, after nixing many baby-unfriendly activities, including going to a trampoline park, thanks, Tay-Tay, for that one, the brothers settle on going to the Christmas market as an entire family, thank you very much, but Luke insists that they at least check out the ice skating. At the rink, Tay-Tay runs into Fiona. She's on an ice skating date. Huh? With her niece. She's not going to go on the ice, though, because she forgot her gloves. And as we all know, you absolutely have to ice skate with gloves on, right? Right? Right?
I have never ice skated with gloves on in my life.
Yeah.
Actually.
Tay-Tay generously gives her his mittens to use. After Fiona goes to join her niece, the brothers walk off asking Tay-Tay if there's any hope of resurrecting his relationship with her, because they know that he really likes her, but he seems pretty dubious about that.
And Fiona's banging, get it? Because she's got bangs.
Oh, she's got those bangs. Hey!
Fiona's banging with her bangs.
And not only is she banging with her bangs, but Tay-Tay's pretty sure she hates him.
Mm.
I could understand that.
Yeah. He is kind of unsavory.
He's a curmudgeon-y, bit of a dick kind of guy. Yeah, you know. I mean, that's a lot of fun to be with and all, but still.
Why are you looking at me when you say that, huh?
Ultimately, the brothers and Thomas end up in front of the Santa stand. And while Stefan walks nostalgic about their last pick with Santa when they were kids. Luke carpes that DM gets the brothers and the baby elf outfits, and before Stefan can say memories, the four of them are strolling up to Santa in full elf regalia, looking glorious. Cover girl, put some bass in that walk. Head to toe, let your whole body talk.
Did you notice that Tyler Hines had the looks, the candy cane popped into the corner of his mouth like his toothpick?
Yes.
That was a fun little nod to the Tyler Hines fans that know he always has a toothpick or something in his mouth. Mm-hmm. Why not me? And this time he used a candy cane.
Oh, Tay-Tay, you're just so cool.
Mm-hmm.
That night, the boys have a slumber party in the living room with the baby. They are finally working together and bonding, and it's really cute. And that baby makes me want to cuddle, not raise, but cuddle a baby, activating my very dormant biological clock.
We can make that Christmas dream happen, Corinne. We will just hang out outside some firehouses and hope somebody drops off a baby.
Oh, God. That got dark real quick. Jesus. Are you dropping off your baby? No need to bring it in there. Let me just kidnap this baby for myself. But temporarily, I'll return it, so don't you worry.
Yeah.
Sadly, the peace is short-lived between them as the next morning the great debate among child-rearing continues. Stefan is trying to sterilize the bottle. Luke is insisting soap and water is fine, and Tay-Tay blearily mumbles, he's kind of in the Tamra camp. I didn't know you were supposed to wash it, on his way to the fridge. Although I don't think that you would be like, what? We don't need to wash the bottle.
Oh, gosh. This smells like sour milk. It's fine. It's fine. It's totally fine. It's different from taking the top pile of baby formula from the mound that hasn't touched the ground. Very different.
Yours would just be more like rinse it out. Yeah, if you just rinse it out, give it a little shakeroo, you're good to go.
Telling you. Like we've talked about this in the last episode, gum off the floor. It helps boost your immune system.
Helps.
Not washing dishes, merely rinsing them off. Wonders for your immune system.
The boys wonder how their mom did it. Fuck how she still does it. And she doesn't complain. She's just there for them and takes care of them. They decide that they need to do something for her. And they're starting off with doing Christmas the way she'd want it done. First stop, new tree. Oh, Tannenbaum, how lovely are thine branches.
Wasn't mom asking them to decorate the tree? Did she just fail to mention that they didn't have one, that they would have to go get a tree to decorate the beginning of the movie?
It's all part of the process. It's all part of the process.
Oh, I see. It's like the motherly bait and switch. Like, oh, can you decorate the Christmas tree for me? Sure, mom. Okay, great. Well, first we need one.
Yes, exactly.
So go to the Christmas tree lot to pick one out, which they do. All three boys beeline it to the Christmas tree lot. Luke points out a pot. I put Lucas. His name's not Lucas. Why did I all of a sudden decide to rename him Lucas? Luke points out a pine, and Stefan is super against it. He says it's buying a pine is like going to a dinner party, saying you're going to bring the wine and showing up with the Zinfandel blend.
Oh,
the horror.
The horror. Do you even know what a Zinfandel blend is? I don't. Have you tasted it? Is your palate offended?
Bartles and James?
Yeah.
Maybe? Is it like Boone's Strawberry Hill Zinfandel? But I don't know.
Yes. Don't know. Oh my God. If it's like Bartles and James, like do not bring the peach Bartles and James to Christmas.
You don't even know what peach tastes like. Your lips must like should have a chastity ring on them because you have not drank. Have you ever?
Look, I am pretty sure that Bartles and James taste like Kool-Aid. So that's all I'm going to say. I'm sticking to it. I know it's supposed to be wine coolers, but I'm pretty sure it tastes like Kool-Aid.
Okay.
Please enlighten moi.
Oh, Connie, I couldn't remember what Bartles and James taste like. The last time I had one was probably when I was like 16.
Well, surprise! There's a knock on your door. Guess what? I just got delivered.
Oh, Lord. It's a hangover in a bottle. You're welcome. Merry Christmas. Okay, Luke says, then what do you think we should get? Stefan saddles up to a noble fir and says, I give you, good sir, the noblest of trees, the noble fir. It's for sure the best. None of the brothers are impressed by his rhyme, and Luke reminisces about Mom's fake tree. Remember that one? She brought it out every year until that one Halloween that we made Taylor wear it. They chuckle at the memory, and Taylor wonders aloud, whatever happened to that tree? Luke reminds him that you slid down the hill behind our house and broke off every branch, remember? And then Mom peeled it out of the box the next Christmas. She was so mad. There's a debate whether it was Mom or Dad that pulled out the busted tree. And Luke clarifies, it was Mom. It was the first Christmas after Dad left.
Aww.
A silence falls over the brothers and they shift topics. You know who should pick out the tree? Obviously, Thomas. They all bend over and try to implore him. Blink once for fir, twice for spruce. And Stefan contributes, and blink 11 times if you want a pine. They think Thomas blinks once, but it's not entirely clear. But they do go home with a noble fir. What would you do if you bring home a tree? Do you go inside and decorate it? No, they instead go outside and start stringing lights on the bushes, which catches the attention of Mark LeClark. He sees this and yells, what up, nerds? Check out my glorious lawn, where we once again see the snowman humping the penguin in the sleigh. If you need any decorating tips, let me know. I'm Channel 7's 3-time champ Spirit of Christmas winner. What's up? No big deal. This year's prize is a cruise. I'm going to be in Turks and Caicos in a week sending my buns while all of you turkeys will still be here freezing your bottles off. The man is holding a half-filled glass that looks suspiciously like a cocktail. And maybe he's not an arrogant douchebag. Maybe he's just a drunk douchebag. They watch him walk away snickering and ask, you know who's never been on a cruise? Mom, why don't we try winning that contest and then we can give her the holiday she's always wanted and a vacation to boot. Wonder triplet powers activate.
Yay!
Stefan and Luke go inside and get on the computer to look for decorating inspiration when Taylor comes up from the basement wearing a knight's helmet, holding a shield and several swords and announces, this is all I got. Stefan says, well, no ideas are bad ideas. Let's brainstorm. We need a theme. Taylor offers medieval Christmas. Stefan ignores this, saying, anyone? Theme? Taylor says, medieval Christmas, a little louder. Stefan again repeats, anyone? Anyone? Ideas? Purposefully not looking in his brother's direction. Taylor hears somebody at the door and says over his shoulder, medieval Christmas, as he goes to answer it, while Luke mumbles, what about a Christmas?
Yeah. Way great, to think outside great, the box, Luke.
Right. I'm going to do double Christmas. At the door, Taylor sees Fiona walking away and calls after her. She explains that she was just dropping off the mittens and didn't want to disturb his battle for Middle Earth. Okay, she's funny. I'll give her that. Her bangs are quite humorous. He explains that they're planning on overthrowing Mark in a Christmas decorating contest and winning their mom a cruise. In a feeble attempt to get her to stick around, he asks for help. She suggests that she could rewrite the software for those dancing light displays so it does something cool. And that's definitely better than medieval Christmas. Just when Susie arrives and asks if Stefan's home. Taylor invites both the ladies in, especially Susie, because she's brought over a casserole. And inside, Stefan is super surprised to see her. She explains that she knows looking after a baby is hard. And when her friends had twins, she brought over a casserole to help. Just then she looks up and sees the tree and gasps, oh, is that a noble fir? Stefan catches his breath and little hearts start growing in his eyes again because she knows. Taylor takes off his helmet and says, yes, it's the noblest of firs for sure. She chuckles and Stefan glares at him because that's his line.
Yeah.
But they can't go to blows because Luke invites her to stay because she brought food and the more hands on deck to decorate. Together, they finish adorning the tree, and it's transformed to an obviously fake tree with absolutely no decoration other than the lights and large swaths of burgundy and gold ribbon that are all around the house. Huh. But they also put a star on top, so there's that. A.K.A. lackluster, until a remix of Tchaikovsky's Dance of the Sugar Plum Fairy comes on, and the brothers spring off the couch and into action with the choreographed dance number.
Yeah.
It's part synchronized swimming, part bad ballet, all adorable. They pirouette, lift Taylor in the air, and finish strong with Stefan doing a little bit of the robot. It is something to behold, and I had to watch it a couple of times.
All here for it. Ding, 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 ding. Oops, 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 oops. Ding, 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 ding.
I should have put the timestamp that it happens because it is so worth watching.
I bet we might be able to find it on the YouTubes.
Oh, you can just watch it on YouTube. Yeah.
I believe it's the next day and Stefan and Tay-Tay wait in front of the store to pick up Christmas decor for the house because apparently two out of three brothers don't drive vehicles. Luke is supposed to meet them at 10 a.m., but he's not there. I'm like, they live in suburbia. It's one thing if they were like, we're living in New York City and none of us drive.
Yes.
But it's another thing when you're like, we live in suburbia where fucking public transportation is horrible and will take you forever just to go 2 miles.
Yes. And I'm sure their mom's not a slumlord that's like siphoning off most of their wages to pay for the basement and secondary house rental. So
no,
they probably have the money to also buy vehicles. What up?
Or at least bicycles with baby seats.
Baby seats and big baskets for Christmas decorations.
Yes. Luke is supposed to meet them at 10 a.m., but he's not there, and they're pissed. Stefan throws up some excuses for Luke, but Tay-Tay shakes his fist in the sky and proclaims, "Curse Luke's inevitable betrayal! We're never going to get all these inflatables home along with the entire manger set I have my eyes on without Luke's truck." They don't know that Luke ended up having a surprise drop-in of Adam, a teenage son of a firefighter killed in the line of duty. And Luke is trying to make him feel better. Luke vaguely texts them, "Running late, start without me." Wow, such communication.
Oh, you know he's so good at it up until this point.
Uh-huh.
He's been really clear and communicative up until this point.
Oh. Back at the fire station, Luke waxes philosophical. Luke talks about his situation with Adam, and Adam is impressed at how complicated Luke's life is with the mystery baby. Luke talks about how on the other side of immense pain is immense joy. And I just roll my eyes at that. Where's my fucking immense joy, huh? Huh?
I sent it over for Christmas. It's going to be there in a couple days.
Oh, okay. What's he look like? He better be single, emotionally available, and interested in me.
Oh, it looks much like Tyler Hines in a elf costume with a candy cane jutted out the corner of his mouth.
Ah, you love me. You really love me.
Bing, 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 bing.
Back at home, the unrest continues. Tay-Tay is pissed that they had to Uber home with the manger strapped to the roof of the car, and Stefan tries to extend some grace for Luke, but Tay-Tay isn't having it. Luke comes home apologizing. "Hey guys, I'm sorry I'm so late." Late. He is like beyond late. Like when he's like, "Hey guys, start without me." You know, you think, "Oh, we'll just like go into the store, we'll gather up some stuff, and he'll meet us like partway into the shopping, or maybe even like once we're all checked out, he'll be showing up." But No, they make it all the way home, and that was after waiting around for a sorry ass. Tay-Tay says, "You've been gone all day. What, you have like an hour before your fundraiser and leaving us with Thomas?" Luke tries to explain. "A kid came to the fire hall and I had to drive him home." And I'm like, that explains showing up at 11 a.m. instead of 10 a.m. Really, Luke?
And then I went to the titty bar down the street and blew like 3 hours.
I know.
Stave off the blue balls somehow.
Oh, well, yeah.
From the chastity ring, you know.
You gotta coddle those baubles somehow.
Yes.
Tay-Tay is done. Just stop with the excuses. Someone else is always more important. Luke has had enough and he tears into Tay-Tay and Stefan. "Wait a minute. Since the day Dad left, I've been the one picking up the slack. Not you, Stefan, who hid, and not you, Tay-Tay, who was too busy always getting into trouble. I was there for the both of you when Mom was underwater, and she was always underwater. I picked up the groceries, mowed the lawn, packed your lunches, got you," he gestures to Tay-Tay, "from the principal's office, and helped y'all with your homework. I've always been there for you and everyone else but myself." Tay-Tay is pissed. "You're right. It's stupid to think we could work together." And he storms down to the basement. Stefan looks at Luke, asking him softly and sternly, "Did you really have to go there?" Luke walks past Stefan, beleaguered. "I've got to go get ready."
Because that night at the First Responders Children Foundation fundraiser, they're auctioning off dates with firefighters. "Yes, please. Where can I sign up?" But also it depends on, do these dates come with happy endings if you put in a little bit more money? Sorry, don't mean to sexual harass first responders. My bad. Luke stands in the back, smiling at the success of it all. Back at home, Stefan is taking care of Thomas. He lays him down on the couch and tells him just how perfect he is while he takes off his onesie to change his diaper, only to notice that there is a rash around his neck that is growing. He instantly panics and asks, "What did I do to you?" At Fun and Games, Taylor's speaking with Fiona and telling her the decorations are off. His brothers are impossible to work with. And she's pissed because she already took off time from work to help him with this stupid lighting project while simultaneously being overworked because they're down one person. Him. Not to mention the fact that she could lose her job any day or at any time by letting him back into the Fun and Game headquarters. Taylor is adamant and still wants to point fingers at everyone except himself, and she reminds him that this was about your mom. This was something you were all supposed to be doing for her, and suddenly you make it about you? And by the way, do you know why we didn't work out? Because you did the same thing with us. Your brothers aren't impossible, you're the impossible one. Just then, his phone pings, and he apologizes, saying that he's got to go, but she doesn't want to hear it, because it seems to be a typical Taylor scenario for him to leave the conversation when things aren't going his way. She throws up her hands as a whatever gesture as he hurries out the door. Back at the fundraiser, the MC stands on the stage and announces that they raised over $27,000 and tries to call Luke up, the one that's put this all together, to honor him for his extraordinary service and contribution. Aww. Finally, the recognition he deserves because he never gets any from his brothers at home. He stands behind the microphone, and before he can give his speech, the phone bings. He looks at it and says, I'm sorry, everybody. I gotta go. Because Thomas is at the hospital. The brothers arrive and gather around a very worried Stefan. He tells him about the rash and it was spreading and he didn't know what to do, just as the doctor comes out holding the baby. Aww. She looks at them seriously and says, I'm afraid I have some very bad news. This baby needs a diaper change. It is. The doctor is dun-da-da-da, Kimberly Sustad. And girl, that's fucked up. You don't ever come out for a medical diagnosis and tell somebody that it's bad news as a joke. Oh, my God.
Although I think for Tay-Tay, who it takes those diaper changes very personally, it might be bad news for him.
Oh, I know. But just as somebody who's a borderline hypochondriac, if somebody comes in and says, bad news, you need to change your socks, I'd be like, I'm going to throat punch you right now. Her face breaks into a smile and she tells him that Thomas is perfectly healthy. He's just breaking a tooth and it's very common to get rashes. She hands the baby over and asks which of them is the father. And I'm like sitting there during this part going, do not tell her that a random lady left this baby at the fire station because she will call Child Protective Services as is her duty.
Yes.
Smartly, they do not. They say somebody left the baby in their care over the holidays and leave out the specifics.
Instead, they show each class chastity ring. All three of them with their matching.
I know. They do the chastity ring dance.
Yes, they each throw up their hand, showing their beautiful chastity rings and saying, we are saving ourselves for the woman who is meant to be our love. And then they stare at her intensely. Are you that?
I know. I'm surprised she doesn't carry the baby out and be like, where's the baby's father? I know it's any of the three of you because you have the chastity rings. That tells me you're all virgins and pure as the driven snow with unsullied loins.
But I'm so glad that you got it with the ruby jewel representing the blood of Jesus and the beautiful crucifixion of him on the side of the ring.
Right. Which is how she notices them, because they're huge.
Yes.
Because they're the size of a class ring.
I always, like, class rings have never appealed to me. They've always looked like giant warts because they're just like these huge bulbous things.
Yeah. I wanted one when I graduated. But then after that, I'm like, I would never wear that shit. I probably would have worn it like a couple of years after high school and then been like, and it's time to move on.
Oh, I was like, oh, when you graduated Northridge, really?
No. I'm talking like McLean. Teen years, yeah. Like 18. Yeah.
That makes sense.
She chuckles and says, three men and a baby. Boy, you can't write this stuff, can you? Ba-dum-bunch, because she did. And by the way, good luck nailing that Mark guy to the wall, because he sounds like a piece of work. As she walks away, the two brothers look at Stefan, and how does she know about Mark? To which he just shrugs and explains, she was very thorough. And Stefan seems like the type that wouldn't pour his heart out to anyone except for maybe Kimberly Sustad.
Aww. On the car ride back home, they all make tender amends with each other. And when the brothers pull up to the house, Stefan apologizes for scaring his brothers. I saw the rash and I panicked. The other two brothers agree. You made the right call. Luke takes a moment of sitting in the darkness to apologize. I'm sorry for all the stuff I said And Tay-Tay interrupts, "Don't. I know I have a tendency to blow up and run when things get real." Luke is sympathetic. "Who am I to judge? I spend so much time trying to please everyone else, I get resentful and lash out. Sorry. I want to be there for you." Stefan and Tay-Tay agree. "You are." And Tay-Tay continues, "You stepped up when you never should have had to. And I think I took it out on you because you were, well, the closest thing we had to him. And I do have a tendency to put my feelings in the wrong place." Stefan confesses, "We all cope in our own ways. And I hid, but you needed a brother." Tay-Tay continues, "And we all needed a dad. And I was so mad that we didn't have that." Luke chimes in, "But we have so much. We have the best mom, and we have each other. And maybe that's all we need."
Aww.
Yeah. The next day, speaking of tender moments, Mark LeClark sees the brothers' front yard and freaks the fuck out. There's decor in it. Meanwhile, the brothers are inside. They are working like a well-oiled machine to take care of Thomas, and Stefan declares his loves for his brothers, while Tay-Tay uncomfortably responds, "Love you too," and Luke responds, "Love you three." Their love fest, though, is interrupted by clanging across the street. Tay-Tay looks across the street to see Mark LeClark dashing up a ladder with an inflatable Santa over one shoulder and looking suspiciously over his other shoulder at stealthy competitors that might be around. Since Mark is upping his ante across the street, they're going to need to call in some favors. So, later that evening, Fiona is back for the light spectacular, and so is Susie. She's got outfits. Stefan is freaking out because people... And Tay-Tay thanks Fiona for helping them. And she smartly responds, "I'm doing this for your mom." Tay-Tay responds, "Fair." And then she asks, "Are you sure your electrical panel can handle this?" And Tay-Tay says, "Maybe."
Ooh, what are they going to do? What are the brother runners got under up their sleeve? Is it a Christmas light spectacular? No.
Oh.
And I personally hate this part. This next section makes me so uncomfortable. That night, the news van shows up across the street at Mark LeClark's house. The anchor tells the camera and a crowd that has gathered on the sidewalk that will Mark LeClark defend his title for the fourth year? Mark comes out on the porch and motions for everyone to be quiet so he can flip the switch. His house, bink, is bathed in lights and inflatable decorations as he calls out, "Isn't it great? Aren't I spectacular?" Well, the anchor woman notes, he may not be modest, but of course she can't finish because a fire truck wielding a huge light-up star slowly rolls past the intersection with its sirens on. Sirens. I can say that word. With its sirens on. It stops in front of the Brenner house. Inside, Stefan is damn near hyperventilating. "People, people, all the people. We just have to stand there, right?" he asks. Luke and Taylor get beside him and tell him, "If we don't all go out there together, we're not doing it at all." He looks unconvinced as somebody hands him a shepherd's crook. Next, we see the guys and Susie in front of a lifetime nativity scene at their house. The fire truck is suspending the huge star above them. Fiona flips on the lights and bathes the house in twinkles momentarily before they fizzle out. She races around frantically trying to get them back up, so the guys have to wing it. They do a very poor rendition of "The Night the Wise Men Visited Jesus." They're visiting Mary and Joseph, Luke starts out. But somebody whispers, "We don't have a Joseph." "Okay, Mary," Taylor chimes in. "And we have gifts like golden stuff." They don't remember what else the wise men brought. Stefan steps forward and adds, "We're three kings." Behind him, somebody corrects him, "We're wise men." And he notices the group of people that have gathered and starts having a small panic attack before stealing his resolve and launches into an impressive monologue since they've done so bad so far. "We've come from afar, guided by the star," he points up towards a suspended star, "to pay homage to the king." The audience looks confused, but they're still there and they still have their attention. Stefan asks for the baby and holds it up and says, "We are here for the king," and holds up the baby, Lion King style, signaling the end of the show. A few people clap politely. Mark LeClark looks on confused, but a confident and lone voice in the back starts singing, "Silent night, holy night." night. It's their mom. She moves in closer and the cloud, the crowd slowly starts joining in with their singing. Meanwhile, Fiona has thrown every breaker on inside and the house finally lights up. Yay. And it is about as lackluster as their tree. The crowd cheers and the anchor woman announces, "We have a clear winner. For the fourth year in a row, Mark LeClark wins." The brothers look defeated but still congratulate Mark, who instead of being an ungracious asshole, tells them their setup was confusing, but their acting skills were pretty sick. I'm gonna go talk to my fans and accept the prize, but I got a keg of eggnog and you guys should come over and help me drink it. The brothers thank him and say they'll be over later, and Mom snuggles in with her boys and says she still feels like a winner. She didn't get a cruise, but everyone's together and she's got the Christmas she always wanted. They're basking in the glow of her love and the substandard decorations when a dark-haired woman comes forward and says, "Thomas, my baby," and comes to pluck the baby away from the Brenners.
Can we just talk one more moment about the stupid trope of, like, minimal lights creating a short through the house? Like, no, no, your one strand of lights and your one inflatable snowman is not going to cause the breaker to throw in your modern day house. Give me a fucking break. Jesus fucking Christ.
Ugh. Okay, Kimberly and Paul, do better, Corinne said.
Do better. I have a few do better ideas, but yes, that is definitely one of them. That trope is modern. No.
Okay.
No.
Okay. Obviously, you have some strong feelings about this.
No. Anywho. Back in the house, we get to meet Sophie, mom of Thomas. She apologizes, explaining that she was struggling and needed a few days to get her life in order. She was afraid of losing her job and her apartment. Barbara says, "You have nothing to apologize for." And Luke says,
"Yes, you do."
Luke doesn't say, "Yes, you do." But Tamara does.
Yes.
Okay. So what do you think Sophie should say in this moment?
I'm saying she should apologize and Barbara should be like, "That was irresponsible, but I understand." Not, "You don't have anything to apologize for. You left your baby with a stranger." Well, we don't know that he's a stranger. Possibly potential father. Corinne, do continue.
And not quite a stranger, as we find out shortly. Luke says, "Yeah, sure that. But why me?" Luke was the first to arrive when she went into labor. It all clicks into place for Luke. "I remember you. We both looked a lot different in that moment, though." She talks about how calm and gentle he was, and he remarks on how brave she was. "And I'd like to give such a big shout out to firefighters. They were the immediate responders to my sister. I saw them gently working with her, trying to rouse her. And when she ended up needing more intensive measures done, they were calm, respectful, and they left me with the feeling that everything that could have been done to help her had been done. And that it was done in a way that was as positive as possible under the circumstances. The only thing that wasn't positive about that experience was, well, not a single firefighter asked me out. I didn't get a man out of the deal."
Damn it. Do better, firefighters.
Do better, jeez. Firefighters. Jeez. Anywho, back to our movie. Sophie says she should head out, but first the brothers get a chance to say goodbye to Thomas, and it's lovely and sweet seeing the bond between the four of them. The next day is Christmas Day, and Barbara and her three sons are all downstairs, gathered by the tree. Barbara is thrilled to see the framed photo of her sons and Thomas dressed as elves with Santa. She is so appreciative that they're all getting along. They group hug and Merry Christmas each other. A little bit further in the future, it's almost New Year's and Stefan drops by Susie's to share that he did the talk at the animal shelter that she encouraged him to. He thought that since he had stepped up to the plate at the nativity in front of everyone, that he was healed from his problem with public speaking and anxiety, but it was a shit show. He passed out midway through.
I appreciate that. They're not like, "And they lived happily ever after." He's like, "No, I've passed out and hit my head and had to stop in the middle of the speech."
But now he realizes that sometimes things never heal, and that's all right. We just need to find the right people to walk through it with. We just need to find the right people to walk through it with. Winky, winky. Stefan confesses, "I find myself completely enraptured by you, Typically, after a day like today, I'd go home and hide, but instead, I find myself knocking on your door because all I wanted to do was see you and share my experience with you. You make me not want to hide away. He smiles softly, his heart eyes radiating, and continues, in fact, you make me... And he is cut off because Susie is a woman who knows what she wants. And what she wants is to kiss the shit out of him. And she does.
Nice.
They pull apart and Stefan kind of glows gloriously happy.
Back at Fun and Games, Taylor is tying up his own loose ends. Fiona's meeting with Tay-Tay's teams and confessing there's no way we're going to finish the game by the launch date. A voice from behind them says, not when you're busy helping people like me that don't deserve it. It's Taylor, and he comes bearing a box of treats that he puts down as a peace offering on the table in front of them. I was selfish, Kevin, Marvelous Jim adds, and insufferable. Taylor thanks him. Yes, that too, Kevin. I owe an apology to all of you because every time something goes right, I sabotage it, either for fear of being left or I'm not entirely sure, but I'm still working on it. But I don't want to be that way anymore. Being like that made me lose the one person that I loved. Aww. He looks down pointedly at Fiona. And I'm sorry. I'd like to help you reach your launch date and maybe take you out afterwards. I think I can afford it. I still have my job. He looks over at his old boss who is standing in the office doorway who gives him a thumbs up. And he sits down directly in front of Fiona and says, I promise I will not make the same mistake twice. She looks at him with an unreadable expression on her face, but then slowly extends her hand with her pinky up. He takes it in his own and they smile as they make a pinky swear.
Aww. Yeah. Back at home, Luke looks at Thomas's ornament on the tree, grabs it, and goes to Sophie's house. She answers the door and is surprised to see Luke. Fancy seeing you here. He stammers, hi, I thought you might want this. He hands her the cute little foot ornament and says, if you ever need any help with Thomas, I'd love to. Sophie thanks him and Luke continues, I know what it's like to do everything on your own, constantly falling short and be worrying about letting people down. I can't even imagine the pressure of being a mom. I want you to know you're not alone. She invites him in to see Thomas and hangs a, if this house is a ruckin', don't come a knockin' sign on the door now.
I think a fire alarm sized doorbell would be appropriate at this point to put in front of the door. It'll be more subtle than the don't come a rockin' if this house is a knockin' sign, but still.
1 year later, it's Christmas. It's Christmas again. This movie has two Christmases. Christmas.
And Corinne is just so upset about it.
So sad. And it's at Luke's place. Mark LeClark rings the fire alarm doorbell and everyone is there. Barbara, Louise, Tay-Tay, Stefan, Fiona, Susie, Sophie, and a child that looks nothing like an older Thomas, but we're going to pretend he does.
Sure. Winky, winky. Winky.
That child is a straight up redhead and that baby previously was not. And yeah. Anyways, the dance of the Sugar Plum Fairies comes on and the brothers are ready to dance.
Bing, 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 bing. And they don't show it, though. They don't show a second round of their glorious choreographed dance, which I was disappointed about.
I was very disappointed as well. Oh, the end. So, Miss Tamara, what are your thoughts, your feelings, and how many dry kisses do you give? Three wise men and a baby.
It is a strong movie. I would definitely recommend. And I'm going to give it four dry kisses.
Yeah,
one for each Brenner brother. And a fourth just because it was a very fun, well-written movie. Aside from some of the normal tropes of like the lights not going on the house because the breaker broke, yada, yada, yada.
Yeah.
And then the guys being like completely clueless about a baby, like the... ridiculously clueless.
Yes. Like the whole, I am a man and therefore incapable of taking care of a child or doing household things, like just totally irks me. Like that whole...
You know how to make cookies, but you can't take care of a child. Two of the three brothers made cookies or attempted to, but they don't know that a baby doesn't take extra large adult diapers.
Well, to be fair, the only person who didn't try baking cookies was also the person who bought adult diapers for said baby. So
Okay. Well, that's neither here nor there. All I'm saying is, like, that's just one of the tropes that I'm like, come on.
Yeah.
Like, in this day and age, they could not be nearly that clueless. But regardless, like, that was just a small blip on the radar. There was some diversity, but it was all the secondary characters, which really, really a miss Hallmark by not having Luke have the hots for his firefighter coworker.
Yes.
Which would have been a fun and interesting and better twist than him winding up with Thomas's mother at the end. But yeah. I digress. Still very fun, very entertaining. 4 stars. Corinne, what about you?
I, to give it 4 dry kisses, it would get like a really nice 4.5, but for a few things, some of which you mentioned. Also, like, this movie, they completely could have integrated in. One of the brothers could have been gay. I suggest Stefan, not because he's like kind of a little bit stereotypical that way, like the softer of the three brothers, but because Luke, hello, he should have the hots for the firefighter hottie. Mm-hmm. And Tay-Tay, he's just curmudgeon-y, and I would prefer my gay fantasy to not be curmudgeon-y. So that leaves Stefan.
Of course, yes. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And so I really think they missed an opportunity. One of the brothers should have been gay. Just saying.
Mm, yeah.
But second, everything that you say wasn't as inclusive, as diverse as I would have liked. But a lot of the writing was really smart, really funny. And I thought that the sibling feel between the brothers was very nice, very real. And I also really appreciated the emphasis on, like, the mom. She has the sister and they're supportive of each other. And she wants to have that for her sibling, like for her children. And mm-hmm. you know, like, me and my sister were like that. Like, we totally looked out for each other and we had each other's backs all the time. And, like, I love that they kind of had that message being portrayed through this movie. So.
And yet you're giving me shit for seeing my sister for Christmas. I see how it is.
Look, how are you supposed to be Bremera in my life if you're not, which is the combination of my sister's name and her name.
Yeah.
If you're going to.
Not weird for me at all.
You're. Birth sister's Christmas.
Okay. Way to end it on a good note.
Speaking of, what movie are we doing next week?
We are doing no movie because we are taking a longer break than normal because we need to make all of our New Year's resolutions come true, a.k.a. Tamara needs to get the fuck out of her job and find a better one. Yay! And then Corinne's got some other things she has to do, too.
Yes. Yes. I've got life maintenance stuff to do, as well as I think that we could really use some planning, a nice planning period for ODK as well, which we have never really taken. So I think it would be nice to be.
We are going to coming back with a revamped, refigured, reformatted podcast.
You make it sound like we're going to be changing everything, and we're not, but.
No, it's just, I'm coming back with a totally new host. It's not going to be Corinne. So there's that, but that's just.
She will just still be kidding. Editing the podcast. What?
Oh, did I forget to tell you? I wanted to do it in front of a bunch of people. So you didn't make a scene.
Thanks. That's cool at all. No, but just like, you know, we'll be able to figure out our lineup more than last minute and that kind of stuff. So.
And hopefully we'll be back with new exciting news about what's going on with our lives.
Woohoo!
But we're going to miss you.
We are definitely going to miss you. I got to say, doing this podcast gives me great joy. And I am super happy about that. And we may have a little bit of bonus content along the way. But if you have any thoughts about our vacay or Three Wise Men and a Baby or stupid One Strand of Lights making the electricity go out in an entire house, you can.
Or anything else.
You can email us all at onedrykiss@gmail.com or reach out to us via the social medias at Instagram, Twitter, or Facebook.
And that's one spelled O-N-E. And as always, if you can find the time to rate and review this podcast anywhere you listen to it, we would greatly appreciate it. But in the meantime, we thank you for stopping by and we bid you adieu with one
dry kiss. Mwah! La, la.
Goodbye and see you next time. Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas.
Happy New Year.
Happy New Year. Still same problem. Okay.
Andrew Walker.
Thank you. That was exactly who I needed. You know what I need.
Mm-hmm. Inexplicably, I got a cherry blossom scent from Bath and Body Works. And for some reason, when I sprayed it on and it dried, it reminded me of paper with cherry undertones. Paper. Like, I smelled like paper. It was inexplicably weird.
That's not a sexy smell. Mm-mm. But if you were dating an artist, it might actually work out really well. You'd be like,
does this scent inspire you?
What is that aphrodisiac? I want to suddenly draw all over your body.
I want to plant my nose on your forearm and suck the scent all the way up until your breast-a-sizzles.